So he tried to kill you. My God. Literally, people were yelling hang pins. They would have murdered you.
I'm sorry, Daddy. Papa, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Papa. From Topic Studios and Warner Media Podcast Network, this is Politically Reactive. I'm W. Kamau Bell.
And I'm WWE slightly overweight champion of the world, Hari House Arrest Kondabolu.
We're two friends and stand-up comics trying to make sense of American politics.
By sense, I mean C-E-N-T-S. We get paid in coins.
Make that money! Ching, ching.
Provided something doesn't go horribly wrong, Donald Trump is leaving office and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are taking over. That actually does make more sense, spelled S-E-N-S-E.
But we know Trump's not finished, and we know we're not finished with him either.
So we're going to talk about Trump's future in the courts with former FBI special agent, now CNN analyst, Asha Rangappa.
Federal and state, civil and criminal, you could teach a year of law school based just on the charges and lawsuits Trump may face.
Real estate fraud, tax fraud, bank fraud, hair fraud, hush money payments.
Accepting benefits from foreign powers, improperly obstructing the outcome of the election in Georgia, saying that Trump Tower has the best tacos in New York.
Oh, and a trial in the Senate for incitement of insurrection. The man knows how to close.
Who's going to defend him? And will Democrats fight to hold him accountable? No, Democrats, you better fight to hold him accountable.
We'll cover it all with Asha and also listen to some of our listeners who wanted to bid Donald Trump a farewell.
Bye, bitch!
So long, farewell, I'll beat her saying goodbye.
It's all coming up on Politically Reactive.
Hey, Hari.
Hello, Kamau. Happy Martin Luther King Day / white people using Martin Luther King quotes day. The best / worst time of the year.
Yes. If we could all just be more like Martin Luther King Jr., I think that would be great. Anyway, I think this black guy stole my phone.
Oh, that.
And I could use your help in tracking him down and using the police to hunt him like the dog he is. But yes, if we could be more like Martin Luther King Jr.
The thing about the I Have a Dream, first of all, people haven't read the whole speech because there's a lot more stuff in there that is, you know, that was like the hook.
That was the hook, yeah. Yes.
Because apparently he wasn't going to do that part.
Nope.
Of the speech. And the thing was going okay, but people are like, all right, this is... Yeah. All true. And I think it was Mahalia Jackson yelled out like, do the dream, Martin.
do the bit about the dream.
and then he went right to the hit it was huge. But people, they don't even know the speech. They know that phrase.
The great thing, just I want to back up on the thing about it not going well at first. It is so, as a comedian, you know that moment where you have like, especially for a show you produce, like he produced that show. So you spent all this energy on, is there enough chairs? Do we have enough refreshments? Can we make sure that the old people sit up front? Like he probably had all this stuff to make this thing happen. And everybody said, I don't even know why you're doing this. This is not going to work. A lot of activists weren't into it. And then he went up there and was like, oh, I forgot to put my set together.
Right. God, that's right. I'm headlining.
Oh, yeah. I'm headlining this and it's not going well. It's because I didn't really work this set that hard. And to me, it is so great to think of Mahalia Jackson, for people who don't know, one of the definitive gospel singers in the history of gospel music, inspiration to many singers, you know, if you don't know Mahalia Jackson. And she's like, tell him about the dream. And he's like, oh, yeah, I should do that bit. Right. She's like, and as another performer, she can recognize when a performer is bombing, and she saved him.
I feel like if he did that speech today, which for a lot of reasons wouldn't make sense, but like if he did make the speech today, I think you'd hear people say, that Martin Luther King makes great content. The best content. It's a little wordy. We'd love it if it could you make it 30 seconds or less?
Yeah. He would have a lot of like he'd be one of those people who went on Twitter and was like, all right, thread. And he'd be one slash question mark. Like, you wouldn't right. know. He'd be one of those people where you're reading a thread like, man, this story keeps going. The thing I like to point out, we talk about Martin Luther King Jr., and I just pointed this out on Twitter, which I think is important, that, you know, that we see him, and a lot of the pictures we see are black and white photos. There are color photos of him, which sort of puts him in a different context. And the thing I like to remind people, again, let's remember, he was assassinated at 39. Mm. In those photos, he looks like a 60-year-old man, because trying to defeat white supremacy every day of your life can put some years on you. And also, everybody looks older back then because everybody's wearing a suit all the time. 39. How old are you, Hari?
God, I'm 38.
Oh, you got a year to catch up.
I got a year to do a lot of shit.
We need a Nobel Peace Prize.
Need a time machine.
Yes. And then he would only be 92 if he was still alive. Like, he's not, he didn't, we think of this, a lot of us think of him like existing like 100 years ago, but he could still be alive if America hadn't killed him.
When people say, oh, it was such a long time. No, some people's grandparents remember this.
Well, no, that's the thing I want to say. The thing about the Trump era is a lot of those Martin Luther King Jr. people who were alive when he was around, who basically felt like they had to shut up after he was assassinated, were just waiting for the invitation to start being the racist asshats that we see. So that stuff didn't just bloom again. It was like people were like, finally, I can be the full-throated racist I used to be. There's some news from some alums of Politically Reactive, which is a funny thing to call these people who are like, you know, like in the world doing amazing things, but they were on the show. So now they're alums of our show. First of all, Katie Porter, who was on Politically Reactive this season, it was just announced that she has been pulled off of the House Financial Services Committee, the committee that she became famous on, where she had her whiteboard and she was like, where she asked Ben Carson about Oreos and he made the Oreo joke. And then we all were like, man, he's even dumber than I thought he was. She can't be on it again because of some arcane like rules about committees where you can't be on two prominent committees at once. And apparently she can ask for a waiver, but she already asked for a waiver and this time she didn't get the waiver. It's all nonsense. It's all poppycock, which is a word I'm trying to bring back. But we're definitely worse for her not being on the House Financial Services Committee.
I mean, rules?
Yeah.
We're following rules now? Yeah. Who could have given her the waiver? Would it have been a Democrat giving her the waiver?
The stated reason for our ouster meeting from the Washington Post is an arcane set of House Democratic Caucus rules. So that's the Democrats.
Oh, God.
The Financial Services Committee is a quote unquote exclusive committee, which means that members who take a seat on it can serve solely on that committee unless they ask for and receive a waiver to take on more than one assignment like that.
God damn it.
She did it. She did in the last term. She did that. She received a waiver. She attempted to get a waiver this time. But it didn't. It's not common that people get the waiver. But anyway, blah, 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 blah. Democrats follow the rules.
This is everything that's fucking right. If this is a taste of what we're going to get, you're following arcane rules about committees.
Yeah.
Do you realize what Trump has done? You do remember all the things he has done.
Yeah.
And you're, we realize that, but, you know, you can only be in one prominent committee at the same time, because an 18 girl, what's wrong with you? She's very good in that committee, and she's very good in whatever she's going to do. She's a great speaker. The idea that she can make, like, that committee, like, some stuff in that committee viral?
She made boring financial stuff accessible and exciting and viral. Which you would think the Democrats would be like, yeah, we need more of that. Unless maybe you got some calls from some of those people who are like, apparently this is what happened. They got a lot of pushback from some financial people who didn't like that stuff. And, you know.
If people were younger, and I know this, again, might sound ageist, but I feel like if it was a younger generation that was running the show, they would understand this person keeps going viral. People keep passing her stuff out. That means that makes us all look good. So let's make sure we get her out there as much as possible. She is from Orange County. She's a single mom. She can relate to a lot of people while also questioning power. This is very useful to us. And of course, fucking they don't do it. I don't give a shit. Chuck Schumer, you think I give a shit? I'm never like, oh man, what does Chuck Schumer got to say about this? I've never thought that. And I'm from New York.
How come America didn't get its financial industry under control, even though it was ravaging, ravaging people who were not millionaires and billionaires, and it was totally destroying lives on a daily basis? Oh, rules. Okay, all right. And along with that, just to sort of know what we're going to be dealing with in the next 4 years, because it ain't all going to be great. The day that the House was getting the articles of impeachment ready and they had the debate on the floor, a lot of people had 30-second speeches where they got to get up and say why they thought Trump should be impeached or not. Politically reactive alum, Cori Bush, also congresswoman from Missouri, who was amazing, went up and gave a speech, a 30-second speech, and here's what happened.
Madam Speaker, St. Louis and I rise in support of the article of impeachment against Donald J. Trump. If we fail to remove a white supremacist president who incited a white supremacist insurrection, it's communities like Missouri's 1st District that suffer the most. The 117th Congress must understand that we have a mandate to legislate in defense of Black lives. The first step in that process is to root out white supremacy, starting with impeaching the white supremacist in chief. Thank you, and I yield back.
And from New York wishes to reserve the gentleman from Ohio.
What you're hearing is the sound of several someones booing Cori Bush for calling Trump a white supremacist.
I mean, it's not surprising. I mean, it'd be surprising if they clapped.
But to me, it's surprising because, again, it's just super depressing. Yeah. After, again, president orders an attack on his own government. Within a few days of that impeachment, people were wandering through that same house, like grabbing stuff and rifling through things, as we'll talk about later. And she's standing up to it, and she gets booed. Yeah. So just shout out to Cori Bush. We got your back. Politically reactive listeners, follow Cori Bush, support Cori Bush, because it's going to be a rocky ride. Another politically reactive alum, Kat Brooks, who we had on the show talking about Defund the Police, who, as I mentioned, is a friend of mine with the Anti-Police Terror Project. Kat Brooks, me, and a bunch of other activists, mostly Black activists, had a Zoom press conference the other day. The media showed up, and it is all about getting people to sign a petition to get a second officer charged in the murder of Oscar Grant. Oscar Grant is the Oakland man who was killed on New Year's Eve, early New Year's Day in 2009 by BART police, the Bay Area Rapid Transit. It's like our subway. He was killed he had his hands on his head. He was on his knees. He was killed execution style. One cop was tried and convicted and only served a couple years in prison for like manslaughter. But a second cop was there, and there is absolutely evidence that shows that that cop was guilty too. But the current Alameda County DA, Nancy O'Malley, has decided not to press charges. So this is a petition to force them to press charges. So it's justiceforoscargrant.com, justiceforoscargrant.com. As we talk about MLK, as we said, you can't just post the things, actually do something. This is something you could do that would be helpful to get some people some justice.
This other cop, I think, is the one who initially confronted him,
mm-hmm.
called him the N-word, like yep. in documents that were unsealed, mm-hmm. called the other guy over. Mm-hmm. Like, you couldn't imagine how this situation could actually be worse than it was, considering a man was shot, you know, in the back point blank, but it was worse.
Go sign this petition. And if you haven't seen the movie Fruitvale Station that was directed and written by Ryan Coogler, go check that out too, with Michael B. Jordan playing Oscar Grant. It's an amazing movie.
And after you finish the movie, realize that what happened was even worse than that brutal depiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in other news, let's talk about this. Something more weirdly fun, but also depressing, but fun because of the viral videos that have come out of it.
Yeah.
So all these people went to the Capitol on January 6th because they were told their president wanted them to be there, and they stormed the Capitol. And as much as we want to act like it was, we think it was all like armed, like people with guns who were like in camo paint and who thought they were there to shoot some stuff up. Apparently, there's also some people who decided to do an insurrection, but in style.
Yeah. So,
I'm thinking specifically of a woman named Jenna Ryan, who is a realtor from Dallas, Texas. And I know that because she told us that. And she took a private plane from Texas to the insurrection and Facebook Live the whole thing. And as I've said to many people, when I say realtor from Dallas, Texas, if you know anything about Dallas, you can picture her immediately, like white woman. Yes, she has blonde hair. So she stormed the Capitol. Facebook live streamed it, and several times turned to the camera and said, "I'm Jenna Ryan, and I'm a realtor, and I'll sell your house." So she kept making it an advertisement for her house selling services, as she also committed a federal crime.
You can't get a, like, unless you're the MyPillow guy. That's not really. You can't really get away with shit like that.
She did as if she was at the Super Bowl. She just sort of kept talking to the camera and look at this and look at that. Jeez. And there's one video of her going, "We're going in there. It's life or death." And then she turns the camera back to her and says, "Jenna Rye Realtor, I'll sell your house." Like she's like in the middle of like screaming life and death, gets an ad in for her realty service. And then she definitely went into the Capitol. There's footage of her going in. She said she did not, but we have her phone we have the footage from her phone. And then she went home and then the Fed showed up and arrested her. And then she went on Dallas local television and basically demanded in a way that a white woman of a certain age can.
"I would like a pardon from the president of the United States. I think that we all deserve a pardon. I'm facing prison sentence. I think that I do not deserve that."
She took a private jet.
Private jet. And is like dressed, like she's dressed for like, you know, I mean, she's got red, white, and blue on, but she looks like she's at like a Patriots game. Like it's,
man, it's racist Coachella. That's what it was.
Yep. It's absolutely. And just to me, this video of her screaming life and death and then saying Jenna Ryan, realtor, is like just the perfect, it's like 17 seconds long. If anybody goes, "I don't know if I believe in white privilege," and you just go, "Hold on a second, let me show you this video." Because you'd have to believe that America had your back at the highest level for you to actually think you could turn your insurrection, your coup, into a commercial for your realty services. And there's been other videos that have come out of the crew of people who actually entered into the House chambers, running around, rifling through like a three-ring binder, like going, "Look, we got to find evidence. We're looking for evidence. Ted Cruz wants us here." And then like looking through a three-ring binder, thinking that they're going to find some sort of damning evidence that will then invalidate the election in some three-ring binder that somebody just would like have in the chamber.
Look for Hillary, Benghazi. I'm sure it's in there.
In a thing that is like, you know, they broadcast all this shit on C-SPAN, right? Like they're not doing super complicated things here. It's like they're not doing things that are going to have like the secret evidence in this three-ring binder.
Check for a child sex ring. That's what Q told us.
And also there are, you can see police officers in there sort of like trying to talk them down. Like, "Hey guys, be respectful. Like, I'll let you rifle through the House chambers, but be respectful." Meanwhile, there's like a cop with his head caught in the door who's been having his head slammed in the door over and over again. And this cop's like, "Hey guys, be respectful."
I mean, whenever there is a police shooting and, you know, you see like a rally in, let's say, like what happened with George Floyd, the rally in Minneapolis, the police gear up in cities all over the country where black people are. Mm-hmm. They prepare for police action. They prepare. That's how insane it is. They actually are prepared for something that hasn't happened because they make racist assumptions that XYZ is going to happen and they're prepared. Meanwhile, this shit, anything goes.
I'm old enough to remember when people were worried that black people would riot at the movie Straight Outta Compton.
Oh, did they really think that?
They were afraid that black people would riot at the movie Straight Out of Compton.
Which was just like Compton?
Yeah, like that you would go see that movie about NWA, you're excited, you pay for the movie, you're excited to see the movie, and somehow the movie induces you to riot. So
not like 12 Days a Slave or
No, not like Fruitvale Station.
Fuck, I mean even Tropic Thunder I could imagine a riot, rightfully so. But you're telling me people thought that film?
They were prepared for riots at the movie Straight Outta Compton and not prepared for the insurrection that was being told it's on its way. The insurrection is booked an appointment. We're going to be insurrecting on January 6th, if you could just hold a slot for us.
Quick correction, it was 12 years a slave, not 12 days a slave.
Oh, yeah. No, 12, I mean, any period of time as a slave is bad. It's a lot, but 12 years, that's not the same movie.
No.
Man, that 2 weeks was, whew, that was bad. It's a shorter movie. All right, so let's get to the interview this week.
Well, you know, as you're listening to this, Donald Trump hopefully is out of office, which means he has to deal with potential you know, legal ramifications. So we decided to talk to CNN commentator Asha Rangappa about Donald Trump's legal future. Oh, this is going to be fun. Asha Rangappa is a lawyer and senior lecturer at Yale's Jackson Institute for Global Affairs.
In the past, she's worked as an FBI special agent, and now she's an analyst for CNN, a very good network.
But let's talk to Asha. Asha, thank you so much for being on Politically Reactive. I have been extremely excited for you to be on the show because you're basically a game show host that's about to tell the audience about the lovely prizes they might win.
Okay.
Meaning, can you tell us the different ways that Donald Trump can go to jail? Tell us what we've won.
Okay, so behind door number one. I mean, do you want me to do all the doors first and then give all the caveats, like all the fine print for the
yes,
prizes?
Yes, please yeah. do okay. that. Let's not find out that we have to pay taxes for the winnings yet. Let's
Okay. Behind door number one is the Department of Justice, which will prosecute federal crimes. And of those, it looks like Trump may be on the hook for several. I think of Trump's crimes in sort of three buckets. There are the crimes that he committed before he became president. These include ones that we sort of know about, for example, the campaign finance violation for which his personal attorney, Michael Cohen, was actually prosecuted and went to jail. In that indictment, he is referenced, Trump is referenced as individual one. He is an unnamed, unindicted co-conspirator. There are also potential crimes that he committed before he became president that may be under investigation. The New York Times has reported on his tax returns and certain discrepancies that have appeared on his tax returns. And these could potentially constitute tax fraud or bank fraud. I imagine that they will be investigating these. So that's one bucket. This is, by the way, still all, we're still behind door number one, okay? These are the many, these are the grand prizes behind door number one.
I like the IRS option. That's how they got Capone. So this is all
yes.
It's perfect.
The second bucket are the crimes that he committed while in office. These include things like obstruction of justice. And there were several counts of obstruction of justice, which were outlined in the Mueller report, which involved things like firing the FBI director during an active investigation and dangling pardons for people. We also know that just a couple of weeks ago, which feels like years ago when this was actually the biggest story in the news, was that he was doing a shakedown of the Secretary of State of Georgia to find 11,780 votes for him. Electoral fraud, interference in the election process, and perhaps a host of other crimes like wire fraud and things like that.
Is that a federal charge or is that a state charge? Because it was
those are well, it's it can be both, but right now we're behind door number one.
Could be a twofer.
So we're talking about the federal charges here, and of course, last week he may have violated the federal code prohibiting incitement of rebellion and insurrection. And potentially, depending on the evidence that is uncovered, seditious conspiracy. So a bunch of things that have happened while he's been president. And then bucket number three is what I call the OJ bucket, because there are the crimes that he has yet to commit.
the OJ bucket.
After he leaves office, right? These are the things in the future. You know, maybe he will turn his life around. I don't know. But he's had a pattern of behavior in his professional life and his personal life that I think can catch up with him at some point in the future. And I think it's important to separate these buckets because the future ones are important when we talk about some of the caveats and fine print. So that's all door number one, which is a really exciting.
Oh,
door.
Jesus. Wow. Okay. That's quite a haul.
That's quite a haul. Door number two would be the state crimes. So this could include things that are being investigated by the New York Attorney General in terms of the Trump Organization. Also, that could involve tax issues because we all file state taxes, right? And if you lie on those or you commit fraud on those can be state violations. There are also investigations underway, I believe, in New Jersey and maybe another jurisdiction. These are civil right now in terms of fraud during, you know, his inauguration in 2017. Again, depending on what's uncovered, could turn criminal. We don't know. The election fraud incident in Georgia could also be a violation of state law. He has gotten around to many different states. And if he has committed crimes in those states, then he can be on the hook in each of those.
Wow.
And those are prosecutable separately than the federal government. Depending on the state laws, they can also be prosecuted for the same conduct in the state and at the federal and state level, because states are considered to be a separate sovereign that have different interests to vindicate. So you don't have double jeopardy issues for a state to prosecute you for the same conduct as the federal government.
That states' rights thing coming to bite him in the ass. In
that states' rights coming home to roost, you know? So, and then door number three, it's not jail, but in some ways it's a metaphorical jail, which is the impeachment process. And as we know, Trump has been impeached a second time, and he will face a trial in the Senate after he leaves office. And even though he's gone, the Constitution does allow for a penalty if he is convicted of being barred from holding an office of public trust. And so that would effectively prevent him from running for office again. And, you know, I think I call these metaphorical jails because they are very important to him. I mean, it's not the loss of liberty in terms of being caged up, but from his perspective, it is, because it limits his options. In the same way that, you know, getting his Twitter account taken away from him is a metaphorical jail for him as well. So those in some ways might even be more meaningful, you know, to him than some of the other things that could be on the table. So those are the three doors, I would say, if I were your game show host.
Is there a chance, and how likely, that we will go through all this litigation in different states and in the federal courts? And I realized, like with Georgia or some of the other states, they might not push so hard if it's a Republican state. What are the chances that he leaves, even with litigation, scot-free, with everything intact, being able to run again, no jail time or fines whatsoever? Like, is that likely?
I'll answer that one. 99.9%. All right, Asha, you take it from there.
Yeah, I would say that there is a non-zero chance of that happening. All of these things that I have mentioned, potential crimes that he could be on the hook for, those are potential crimes. Remember that in a criminal court, you have to have evidence that will prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. And so for all of these things, a prosecutor would have to first decide whether the evidence they have, though for the layperson like you and me, he seems obviously guilty. Mm-hmm. You have to have admissible evidence that you can bring into a court and convince a unanimous jury. And by the way, let's look and see how divisive our country is and just think about how hard it would be to seat an impartial jury and then to convict a former president. I think it's a pretty high bar, even if prosecutors were willing to go down the road. Add to that the fact that he's going to be a former president. We have a very strong norm in this country of not doing this for important symbolic and even democratic reasons, that once we open the door to actually prosecuting one of our former presidents, then we've set a new norm and people can use that as a justification to just simply you know, that we don't want that to become the thing where every president leaves and for political reasons, you know, there are prosecutions for them. I mean, that devolved into a banana republic kind of thing, even if in this particular case would be justified. And I think prosecutors may be very careful about whether or not they want to take that step. In particular, I think the Department of Justice, and this is why I laid out the three doors, because I think that that will be a big consideration for the federal prosecutors, because it will be under Biden, right? And it will appear as though Biden is retaliating or seeking retribution or something like that. The Biden DOJ can say, you know what, we're just going to step back and let the states take the lead, because that's a whole separate thing. And then we don't have the political fallout.
I find that so frustrating because, you know, we're talking about norms, and in this country, we're reluctant to change the norms for former presidents. The norm of being president, the norms that have always been there, are no longer there. Like, he has destroyed so many things that, you know, weren't necessarily illegal to do, but he's done stuff that certainly has disrespected the office and has opened up what a president could do, you know, in the worst possible way. So, you know, we're trying to protect this thing. Isn't it more important to protect the office by saying, if you are president, there are repercussions if you choose to do this? Isn't that more important than the fear of, well, then we're going to prosecute every former president? It feels like, well, not if this is pretty egregious.
Yes. So I think that this is the dilemma with Trump. He is an aberration, even in the bad president, you know.
That's the nicest thing anyone's ever said about Donald Trump, by the way.
And so I think that this is why the second impeachment was really important, because it does kind of put him in this different category. Like, he is really bad. And it's really important that there were Republicans who also got on board in the impeachment vote, because that also adds to this idea that this is not just partisan. And in many ways, defining him in this way, in this historical way, as just having this triple asterisk, five footnotes on, you know, why he's not the same as Nixon, or even, you know, the he's in a category unto himself, may make it easier to pursue him criminally because he has been distinguished in this way. I do think that it has changed the balance a little bit. Before the events of January 6th, I think his supporters could have still argued, come on, you know, even Nixon wasn't prosecuted and he was, you know, bad. But I think now he's just really launched himself into a whole different category. I will also add that this is why the third bucket in that first door is really important, because I think the benefit of the doubt only extends to what he's done up till, you know, the time he leaves office. Once he leaves, if he still keeps criming, I'm sorry, but I think it's fair game.
It's to use your analogy, it's O.J. Simpson in Florida. It's when he was
just
hanging out
in Florida. Don't you agree?
He's going to be hanging out with a way less, like, the fact that the PGA took the championship away from Trump, that means rich white guys don't want to hang out with him. He's going to be hanging out. He may be hanging out literally with O.J. Simpson. he may be hanging out with a much less good class of people.
Right. And I think it's an interesting analogy, because with O.J., he was acquitted, and in many ways it was, you know, a victory for him, but he destroyed his brand. Mm-hmm. He kind of became very sad and pathetic, mm-hmm. in terms of what his life was about. And I don't recall anyone coming to his defense the second time that he got caught and prosecuted. People were like, yeah, dude, like, goodbye, right? Yeah. That's sort of what I see for Trump. I think that he has made it easier to justify going after him, especially since, like, things like the election fraud were a part of the pattern that led to the violent insurrection at the seat of our democracy, right? So in many ways, they can be interpreted as being part of the same criminality that was really an assault on the people of the United States. in a way that can't be excused in the way that it might have been before January 6th, I think.
This is the thing I'm sort of worried about, is people's appetite to prosecute him. It feels like Letitia James has an appetite, the district attorney from New York. The Southern District seems to be seems me and my friend Dwayne, who also is Hurry's friend, always talk about how the Southern District of New York is just waiting for him to be out of office to tap him on the shoulder and be like, can you follow us this way? We'd like to ask you some questions. No.
Oh, yeah.
Don't get on Air Force One. Go come this way.
Absolutely. I think that there will be charges forthcoming from New York very soon after he leaves. That's my gut. And I mean, politically, and I don't think political consideration should be a part of it, but again, I don't think you can avoid it when you're dealing with someone who was a former president of the United States. I don't know that Biden really wants the focus of the first year of his presidency being every twist and turn that's happening in a Trump prosecution. I mean, that would suck, right? Like, it just helps continue the witch hunt narrative. It overshadows probably a lot of the other very important things that he's going to do with regard to COVID or education and immigration, all of these other things. So there is a certain benefit to him to simply allow states to take the lead. I mean, there is something called the statute of limitation. So it's not like they have to do it the minute that he leaves office either. It can come later, and typically investigations take time. I mean, they can take years. So A.G. James has been on top of this for a while. So the states may end up taking the lead sooner rather than later.
Things aren't as dire for Trump as I really hope they would be. Like, I
know.
I have a question that might be dire for Trump that might cheer you up, Hurry. it's not a fun question, but there's another, to use your term, maybe door. I don't know if it's a bucket. But he's facing a defamation lawsuit from E. Jean Carroll, who accused Trump of raping her in the 1990s. Is that there's also other people who have accused him of things. There's also Stormy Daniels. Is that a place where there might be justice?
Yes. It won't be orange jumpsuit justice.
But it will be. It could be like civil suit.
Civil suits with financial penalties. You know, civil suits have a different burden of proof than criminal cases. You have to prove something beyond a preponderance of the evidence rather than beyond a reasonable doubt. Again, to use the OJ analogy, OJ was acquitted for the murders of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman. But he did... was found guilty in a wrongful death suit with a significant...
I think it was like $33 million, I think is what it was.
Right, and I'm not sure he ever paid. And I mean, one way, you know, you can really hurt Trump by hitting him in his pocketbook, right? Mm-hmm. And he's already basically lost so many sources of his income in terms of these contracts being canceled, in terms of the PGA being taken away from his, you know, golf...
Trump National.
...resort. Yes. And remember, he is, the New York Times had reported at that time, $421 million in debt. So this guy is hurting for money. There is, I think, a chance that he could also be held civilly liable for incitement in terms of the deaths that resulted from that. If it was reasonably foreseeable that his actions would result in lawless activity and potentially even violence to individuals, I guess a good tort lawyer could make that claim as well.
I mean, based on, you know, world history, my assumption was that after the inauguration, he'd be off to Brazil, Argentina, or Chile, or perhaps Russia to avoid prosecution. But at this point, that doesn't look like it's going to happen. Like, he's in good enough shape that if he stays in this country, he still might be... Like, there's no reason for him to go into hiding.
No. He hasn't been charged with anything yet. I don't know. Again, we just get into all these crazy scenarios when you're dealing with a former president. If they were to start investigating him or charge him, is he a flight risk? I mean, can he really leave without somebody noticing? I don't know. Do you put out an Interpol notice for Donald Trump?
I do believe that he's going to suffer the metaphorical jail. I think that's definitely going to happen. There's not the whatever the Trump brand was before he went in there. It ain't. It's gotten a lot weaker, you know. And even going into one of these other countries, they might be like, "Nah, dude, we're cool here in Russia. We don't we're cool here in Argentina. We don't need that." So I think that he will be in metaphorical jail in many ways. But I also am sort of worried about the fact that, like you said, that if you do prosecute a president, it opens up the door to prosecuting every president. I'm worried about the mm-hmm. fact that if you don't prosecute a president like this, who has clearly overstepped so many times, then you'll never, ever, ever prosecute right. a president. Like that it just will, we will always sort of go at the end of a president's term like, oh, well, that sucked. Hope it gets better next time, you know, and not sort of drawing a line. I hate the line in the sand, but a line in concrete and steel that says, don't cross this line. Isn't there something to be said about that?
There's a lot to be said about that. And I think the challenge is to somehow define Trump as being such an aberration in our history that has warranted this and that would allow us to take that step, but still leaving a very high bar for any other person to really meet that. I think in some ways we might be able to achieve that balance if the Senate were to vote to convict him in his impeachment trial. That would require 2/3 of the Senate, including, by definition, many Republicans. And I think we already have that bipartisan threshold in the impeachment in the House. And if you could convict him, even though it's a political remedy, I think if you prosecuted him there, in the future, you'd be able to look back and say, look, this is a guy who was impeached twice. He was the first president to ever be convicted in the Senate and, say, disqualified from holding office. Clearly, he had just gone so far beyond the pale that the prosecution here was necessary. It's really hard for me to imagine. I guess it's not hard for me to imagine, but I'm hoping that we won't ever have a president again who engages in the kind of criminality that we've seen. We don't want that to become normalized.
I mean, it seems to me that the line he crossed is ordering an attack on his own government. Like, isn't that like a pretty significant... He tried to coup his own government. You know, isn't that a pretty significant...
An autogolpe is really, you know, kind of... a big deal.
Yeah.
He tried to stay in power through extra legal means. Mm. I think, unfortunately, what we've seen is that people are willing to use things in politically expedient ways and to justify disingenuous claims using these kinds of precedents. And that's, I don't know. We need to get to a place where we just agree on some things. Like, let's just agree on some ground rules, okay? Like, we're not going to try to overthrow the government if you lose an election. Like, let's just...
Yeah.
Can we all agree on that?
Yes.
You know?
Yes, it seems like we would be able to agree on that. But like you said, I think that even hearing that Biden's... the theme for his inaugural is America United, I'm just like, ah. Like, I mean, I get what you... I feel like America United with the Americans who want to unite is what it should be. And I think that there is a whole swath of Americans that we have found out are pretty dangerous and scary. And I don't think uniting with them, and I don't think saying we don't want to offend them so we won't prosecute Trump actually unites the country.
What's wrong with justice for all? That would have been a nice
way to... Yeah.
You know, there's a kind of a saying, I don't know if it's a popular saying, but I remember reading this, that he who cares the least controls the most, right? Mm. And so I think where the Democrats end up in a tough situation is that they are trying to hold fast to values, but then those values end up being used against them. You know, we want democratic norms, we want unity, we want, you know, healing. And then you get these calls for, well, if you want unity, why are you prosecuting the former president? Mm. You know, whereas if you have people or a party who just have allowed all values and principles and norms to go out the window, then they can basically do whatever they want. They can say whatever they want. There's no constraints and no sense of shame or hypocrisy that is going to rein them in. And I think that's just in some sad ways, that's where we are, where there are people who are willing to justify anything and rationalize anything. And I don't think you can continue to have a functioning democracy if you can't agree on governing principles. It's like trying to play, you know, a sport without having some rules. Mm.
Asha, thank you so much for doing this. I mean, certainly...
you didn't win as much as you wanted to win, did you, Hari?
No, the truth hurts.
This is like the person who on Jeopardy who doesn't even make it to Final Jeopardy. That's what happened. Right.
you bet everything that you had
on Trump. Negative 1600.
Exactly. Your podium is empty at Final Jeopardy. Sorry. Right.
We need to know this, and we need to know what's realistic and what the various ramifications are. And I do think door number three is something we should be paying more attention to, because we're assuming he's not going to crime again. And that doesn't seem, considering him and his family's history, that does not seem likely. So that is, there's a degree of hope that he will screw this up for himself. I love Donald Trump is white people's OJ.
Yeah.
Is perhaps the greatest realization. Oh my God. I love this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Asha Rangappa is a senior lecturer at Yale's Jackson Institute for Global Affairs.
She's worked as an FBI special agent and is now an analyst for CNN.
No, no, no. Put some respect on its name. CNN.
This is CNN.
So look, obviously, it's the end of the Trump era, or error, as I said in my last comedy special, so we have to mark it in a way that is special.
The American people spoke in November giving Joe Biden 7 million more votes than Donald Trump, but we wanted to give our people, the politically reactive listeners, one more chance to speak directly to Donald Trump.
And here's how some of you wanted to say goodbye to our 45th resident.
Oh, here we go.
Hey, Donald. Hope you're enjoying your last few days in office. Just wanted to let you know that I hope a rat gnaws your dick off while you're rotting in prison. Have a great day.
I've got nothing to say to this racist, lying sack of old taco meat. I want to say something worse than that, but...
Hey, Trump. Yeah, it's Natalie. I'm calling because January 2017, the first motherfucking thing I did after you came into power was get an IUD. And guess what? My IUD is going to be lasting longer than your ass in presidency and probably, hopefully, in public. So, have fun in jail.
Your New York privileges have been revoked unless you need to be in court as a defendant.
You about to lose your job. You about to lose your job. And I hope you lose it all. I hope you lose it all. Thank you.
Gollum from Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, actually says it best. So I'll let him say it.
Leave now and never come back. Leave now. And never come back.
What do I want to say to Donald Trump?
Bye, bitch.
Bye, bitch.
Yeah, bye, bitch.
I love our listeners.
Even if those small group people are the only listeners, I feel like I have a new respect for the show now.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, the chewing the dick off, the rats chewing the dick off, that visual is disgusting. And the rats are going to be disappointed by how little meat there is.
Chef's kiss, everybody, chef's kiss.
Well, wow. The IUD one, oof, that's...
Oh, yeah, that one was good. So intense, I forgot about it. Yeah, that one was like...
It's good, it's good.
That's good writing. You should write a screenplay. That's good writing right there.
It almost makes the 4 years completely worth it.
No. That's it for this week. Thanks to Asha Rangappa and to all the listeners who called and left voicemails, especially the super salty ones.
Hey, you know, you don't need to wait for a transfer of power to call us and leave us a voicemail. We want to hear your reactions to the conversations we're having here on Politically Reactive.
If you're thinking it, we want to hear it on our voicemail at 917-477-6525.
That's 917-477-6525.
Empire. And keep your comments and questions coming on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram with the hashtag Politically Reactive.
And rate and review the show wherever you get your podcasts. It does spread the word and help people discover the show, which you love so dearly.
And as I mentioned in the intro, go to justiceforoscargrant.com so you can sign the petition. Again, this petition comes from the family of Oscar Grant, justiceforoscargrant.com.
You can find Kamau and I at Hari Kundabol and at W. Kamau Bell on all the different sites. And both of us have Netflix specials, so enjoy them.
Politically Reactive is a production of Topic Studios and Warner Media Podcast Network. Executive producers are Maria Zuckerman and Christy Gressman.
And me, Hari Kundabolu.
And me, W. Kamau Bell.
The show is produced by Matt Martin, Malachi Seeger-Sakir, and Kelly Rafferty. Will Stanton engineers and mixes the show.
And thanks, as always, to Brontez Purnell for providing music for the show. Thanks for listening to Politically Reactive.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii.